This is Seattle's Morning News. Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien. Does the United States Supreme Court need a makeover? The president has set up a commission of both Republicans and Democrats to spend the next 6 months studying whether the court needs more justices or term limits or should remain the way it is. Let's get the opinion of somebody who has argued before the U.S. Supreme Court, former State Attorney General Rob McKenna. So what do you think? Is the court in need of a makeover? Or is this just an excuse to pack it with Democratic justices?
Well, I'm more inclined to think it's an excuse to pack the court because of frustration among progressives that there's now a 6-3 majority on the court of conservatives, and that's not likely to change anytime soon. I think the next justice who's likely to retire is Justice Stephen Breyer, who's considered one of the liberals. So they're tossing around all kinds of ideas and have been for a while now to try to reduce the influence or limit the duration of that conservative majority.
Is it correct to continue to analyze the court in terms of liberal justices and conservative justices, given that from time to time, people like Justice Roberts can surprise you?
Well, that's right. And in the years that I've been closely following the courts, we've seen many instances where one of the justices will break away. Right now, it might be Chief Justice Roberts. Before, it could be Sandra Day O'Connor or Justice Kennedy. So there's no such thing as a solid block, thank goodness, on the U.S. Supreme Court. And I think that kind of undercuts the argument that somehow we should upend some really strong and long-lasting traditions around the court, like lifetime appointment, because of relatively speaking, temporary unhappiness about the court's rulings.
Well, then, do you think the court's perfect? I mean, is there nothing that can be done to improve it, or at least to? I believe the court still has a pretty high reputation. I mean, at this time, we're tearing down all our institutions. The court seems to be still held in some esteem, and it would be nice to be able to hang on to that.
You know, for me, public confidence in the Supreme Court is a lot like public confidence in elected officials. It depends on who the individuals are, right? Pick good leaders, you'll have higher levels of confidence. Pick good Supreme Court justices who are not overly ideological, you'll have more confidence in the court that they're issuing objective law-based opinions. You know, one way we could increase the likelihood that justices will not be ideologues is to avoid ideological litmus tests for individuals who are nominated to be justice. You know, and that's a troubling trend that the left and the right demands a kind of purity as much as they can get it of justices who are nominated. And we've seen that for a long time now, along with the tendency of senators of opposite parties to try to tear down the nominees who are presented to them. You know, it wasn't that long ago when Antonin Scalia was nominated and received really broad bipartisan support. So did Justice Ginsburg. We need to get back to a system that produces more bipartisan support for the nominees, even though there may be less, shall I say, certainty about how they might vote on certain issues.
Do you think lifetime appointments are a necessity for an institution like the Supreme Court?
I think the lifetime appointments are valuable because they reduce the odds of the Supreme Court shifting quickly with political currents. I think you get more stability, and we need stability in that institution as one of the three co-equal branches of government. If you only allowed them to serve a limited period of time, you would at a minimum end up with even more fights, more frequent fights over who's being nominated and who's being confirmed. You would also lose the wisdom and judgment of justices who serve a long time, learn a lot, and often over time, become, I don't know if mellow is the right word, but really more considered in their judgments. I think that's important. I mean, for those people who are eager to impose age limits, for example, or term limits, consider how much less time Ruth Bader Ginsburg would have served on the court. Mm-hmm. There's a tendency to only focus on the justices that one side or the other doesn't like. But I actually think these long-serving justices tend to get better, stronger, and more valuable with age.
What about the idea of just making it kind of like jury duty? So you have these pool of these brilliant people who are on these various federal courts of appeals, right? Mm-hmm. Suppose you just had a a lottery. They've already been confirmed. They've already been vetted. And so you choose every 7 years, you rotate it, right? But you choose nine people who serve for 7 years or 14 years or whatever without going through a second and politicized confirmation process.
I think you lose too much institutional memory. In fact, I think you short-circuit the creation of institutional memory. And the reason that's important for the Supreme Court is that it's the highest court in the land. And the justices who hear cases, and certainly this is true in the cases that I argued in front of the court, are very, very thoughtful about how their ruling in a particular case won't just affect the parties and the legal issue in that particular case, but how it will affect future cases. If I rule in your favor, counselor, what does that mean for the next case that comes? Mm-hmm. These justices are masters in understanding how their decisions create precedent, how those precedents then have impacts in the future. I think that's why, you know, for example, you see Chief Justice Roberts being very iterative in issuing rulings, even rulings that over 10 years might change an area of law. It's very incremental and careful. And that's because they want to be thoughtful and not create sudden change. There's a doctrine in law and jurisprudence called stare decisis. It means that the court follows its own precedents. That's really important to create stability and predictability in the law when you're thinking about law that's created by court decisions.
So it sounds like you like the court the way it is.
I guess that's an example of why I'm a conservative. I have to be. I'm conservative. I want to be convinced that before something is changed, especially something as important as the court. And I admit I'm a fan of even a bit of a junkie when it comes to following the court. And the evidence is, if you look at the arc of history, is that it's worked quite well.
Could that be because you've won all the cases you've argued before the Supreme Court?
All right, you got me. I suppose that's true. You do tend to like the umpire who calls the balls and strikes to help you. But hopefully, for every Plessy v. Ferguson upholding separate but unequal public accommodations, you get a Brown v. Board of Education reversing that horrible, wrongly decided case. It can take time, but I think these days we're seeing that happen a bit faster. I think the court is sensitive to its role. They just do it very carefully and they do it slowly. And I think it's good.
Former State Attorney General Rob McKenna. Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, Dave.
In the nation's northwest corner is Washington.
Our resident historian Felix Bunnell joins us Friday mornings for All Over the Map, his quick look at the stories behind the names of local places and things. And this week, the essential piece of logging equipment developed along the shores of and named for an iconic northwest body of water. What would that be, Felix?
Well, you know, we've talked here before about the actual guy who named the Buick Rainier SUV, and I've tried and failed to track down origin stories for the Toyota Tacoma. I've been pestering the Costco people lately about the real story behind Kirkland's signature. I just love the idea of national products named for Northwest places.
Yes.
Today, this is something a little different. It's a piece of a logging equipment called a Puget Sound falling axe. Falling as in, falling or felling a tree. It's designed specifically here, probably organically, in Western Washington in the pre-mechanized days, as early as the 1860s. And 100 years ago, as recently as the 1950s, maybe, several manufacturers, mostly in the East, were making and selling them. There are old catalogs that show Puget Sound falling axes on their pages, and my Twitter feed has a few pictures of those. Now, I'll describe what it looks like, then I'll explain the theory about what it was designed for. The head is tempered steel, weighs between 3 and 5 pounds. It's a double bit axe, which means it has a blade on either end, and the blade is long. It's at least 12 inches, maybe 14 inches from end to end.
Oh.
Kind of on the skinnier side, and if you want to look at it in profile from top to bottom. Now, the handle's a little different, too. Most regular axe handles have 36-inch long handles, as you know, Dave.
Yes.
The Puget Sound falling axe, the handle's at least 42 inches, maybe 48 inches, so it's
Jeez,
really long.
How big were these people?
I know. So why would an axe like this be developed, probably in a blacksmith shop of a lumber camp 150 years ago? First of all, the timber here in the Northwest is huge compared to other parts of the country. That's why a longer handle was more useful. Now, second, the big cedar trees in the Northwest often grew from stumps and nursery trees. So to cut down a big tree by hand, loggers needed to be able to get up above a very complex and sometimes rotted stump. That meant cutting holes into the trunk to place springboards. Those are the scaffolding-like temporary structures for men to stand on and then use a crosscut saw. Now, we've all seen those springboard holes, right?
Yeah.
So a local axe expert I talked to, a guy named Tom Allen, he theorizes that the long, narrow, Puget Sound falling axe head was especially useful for cutting those narrow holes for springboards without breaking your axe handle. Because if you look at, like, these springboard, they're very deep, they're very narrow, and a regular axe just couldn't do that. And, you know, if you go on any hike anywhere around here, if you look closely, you'll see these springboards on some of the old stumps. Now, one last thing. There's no patent for this. It's not like a single logger or blacksmith was ever credited with the design. It's not even a brand name. It's a pattern that was manufactured by multiple companies. And there were other axes, you know, named for other parts of the country, like a Jersey, a Michigan, a Long Island, that kind of thing. And they're known nowadays mostly by collectors and enthusiasts. But retired Forest Service axe expert Bernie Weisgerber told me they're still actually used by crews in wilderness areas where power tools are forbidden. Now, you can find them on eBay, and any listener, of course, is welcome to give me theirs. I'd love to have one for a paperweight. I think it'd be fantastic and probably somewhat dangerous piece of desk hardware.
That could be a boat anchor. I didn't realize there were actual axe experts, but if there are, I'm not surprised you found them.
Yeah, and I'd never heard of this before. I stumbled across it doing some other research, as I often do, and just was blown away by just this deep, deep well of information out there about the Puget Sound falling axe.
All of Felix's features are at MyNorthwest.com. Have a good weekend, Felix.
You too, Dave. Thanks.
This is Seattle's Morning News. Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien. And joining us now, in for Margaret Brennan, is Ed O'Keefe, CBS News senior White House and political correspondent. So tell me about this new movement by mainstream Republicans like Michael Steele and former New Jersey Governor Christine Todd Whitman to create a non-Trump party. Is that going anywhere?
Oh, it's a good question, Dave. We hear about this every so often now in the Trump era, don't we? And, you know, are they mainstream if they're former Republican office holders? Do they hold as much sway over anyone outside of, green rooms? It's hard to know. But there is an effort afoot to at least sort of create a movement of people who are currently or perhaps recently former members of the Republican Party to make the point that if it continues to align itself with the former president the way at least its top leaders are doing, that's detrimental to the future of the party and it needs to end. The problem is the startup cost for a new political party is just enormous. You know, I think if anything, this is a signal at the end of a week that saw yet another round of real public disagreement in the Republican ranks over its future, that there, you know, are those who do not align themselves with the former president who are still gravely concerned about what this could do to the party's future.
So what is Trumpism exactly? Could you name the top three principles?
You support him and agree with him on virtually everything. The general sense of America first and all that might mean for those that believe it. I think at its most basic these days, basically be in opposition to anything the current president is doing. You know, that's perfectly fine to have an opposition party that disagrees with the guy in charge. That's no different than usual. The difference in this case, of course, is everything else that comes with it and the way in which it's done. The intolerance, the disagreement, or, you know, wavering from the belief of the former president, the nasty way it's said and done. It has caused a lot of people to have to go underground or to be quiet lest they face the potential consequences. And it stretches from what they did to Liz Cheney this week in the House Republican Conference to that ongoing recount of ballots in Maricopa County, Arizona, based on a complete fabrication and falsehood, to all sorts of other examples at the local, state, and national level among Republicans.
Well, I keep reading these statistics saying that the Republican Party is, quote, shrinking. But if what you say is true and the Trump portion is going underground, then they're not answering the polls. I mean, are the polls missing this?
What's going underground is anyone who doesn't agree with the former president.
Oh, I see.
But in essence, if you look at, and I think it's more prudent to look at party participation at a state level, you're seeing the number of no party affiliation or independent voters increase and sort of hit equilibrium with Democrats and Republicans generally. Florida is a good example of that. California increasingly as well. And that's simply because the next generation or the new generation of voters, don't align themselves with either party, believing that they don't necessarily represent their interests holistically or appropriately. You know, you might be a fiscal conservative, but completely liberal on social issues. Well, which party does that right now? Neither of them, technically, on paper, even if you might choose one for whatever reason. So if you're seeing the decline of Republican registration, yes, that might have something to do with the former president, but it probably also just has something to do with changing voting patterns overall.
Well, I mean, do people these days vote on whether, for example, their candidate can own the libs, which, you know, was one of Trump's big selling points, or do they vote based on how well they are doing personally?
I think there are certainly some that do it one way and probably still more that do it the other. But the whole own the libs mentality probably applies more in a primary, and the what's in it for me still applies more in a general election. And I also think there, you know, this is based on reporting, this is based on experience. You might vote, you know, on the what's in it for me a little more, perhaps in your local elections or your state elections, and maybe a little differently on that other with that other sentiment, regardless of what side of the spectrum you're on. In others, you know, this the one thing I've learned covering this for so long is you can't paint with broad brush strokes when it comes to most Americans and most voting or most voters, and you know, but that's part of the potential limiting appeal, if you will, of what the former president is trying to do.
Yeah.
That if you expect everyone to agree with you, you know, 100% of the time, that may work, but it's only going to work with a limited percentage of Republicans.
Yeah. I remember back when the shoe was on the other foot, back in the 80s, when people had this visceral reaction to Reagan. But after 4 years, they actually felt better off. And so, I mean, he won a second term easily. And now the way I see things going, Joe Biden, you know, he's not exactly dynamic. But he's not crazy. He just said we can take our masks off. And unless we have rampant inflation, it looks like the economy is roaring back. So, you know, could he defy the expectations and see more Democrats elected in 2022 and have a chance in 2024?
Yeah. I mean, I would associate myself with your assessment. And if things keep going his way, sure, that absolutely could happen, and historical trends could be reversed.
CBS White House correspondent Ed O'Keefe, Ed, thanks very much.
Great to be with you.
And it's time for the Daily Dose of Kindness. Brought to you by Robert W. Baird & Company, Incorporated. This should sound familiar to students and their parents.
Let's make sure you get into your portal and open up your Cengage book.
Yeah, that's a teacher leading kids in remote learning. That's St. Charles West High School in St. Charles, Missouri, near St. Louis. But there, it's a student who may have become the best teacher.
He just has a heart for people.
Figure 412, Matrix.
18-year-old Joshua Nelson, that's who she's talking about. He's getting ready to graduate.
I plan to go to Southeast Missouri State and go into their pre-optometry program, to where I'll be majoring in biomedical sciences.
No doubt he'll reach his goals. He's an excellent student, a three-year varsity basketball player, president of the school's Multicultural Achievement Committee. Yolanda Curry is Josh's school counselor. She spoke to KSDK-TV about that committee.
The mission of it is to encourage students of color to maximize their potential and to become college and career ready.
They work on resume writing, interviewing skills, and even strategies for their college admissions tests. But all that preparation couldn't prepare the students or teachers for Josh's recent announcement.
I was like really blown away because I was not expecting that.
Josh earned a healthy scholarship, but that's not what surprised her. He'd also saved up more than $1,000 for college, not knowing if he'd end up with a scholarship, but he did. And then he decided to use that $1,000 he'd saved up to help another student go to college. Fellow students amazed at his generosity.
I think he's an inspiration to some of the other people at the school, especially students of color. I don't even think he realizes that he's doing that much for everyone else as well.
I just think it's unbelievable what he's doing, and it's really exciting.
Students all want to do well on their math and history tests, but Josh, he just aced the test of character.
I really thought that it was important to give back to my community that poured in so much to me.
Over the next few weeks, with some help from his parents and teachers, he's accepting applications for this special scholarship with the hope that this attention will get some donors to multiply that $1,000.
Honestly, it makes me feel on top of the world. The fact that I could just help somebody a little bit in whatever way I can, just me being so young, don't know, like, it just makes me feel great, and I really want to see other people succeed.
Very generous.
Yes, it is. 7:48, and now from the G and Ursula Show, here's G Scott. Are you ready to stride face naked into a world that is only 47% vaccinated?
Are you allowed to swear on the radio like you just did? Did you just say face naked?
I did.
Wow. I mean, you putting it that way? Absolutely not. I need to always, I've always want to be protected. So I'm going to wrap my face up in this case. Well, first of all, let me just say this. I think it was good news. I thought it was good news. I think it gave everybody here in the state of Washington some hope and things to look forward to. I know I don't think anybody was really complaining about it at that point in time. I mean, it's kind of easy to complain, but look, let's just go forward, talk about moving forward. The only concern that I have, not a complaint, it's a concern, as nobody is now not required to wear a mask coming up soon, is now there will be businesses that do have the choice to say you have to wear a mask in this in our business. And I'm kind of nervous for that. And I hope that people have grace for these businesses that do make that decision. I hope that they have grace for that employee that maybe is asked to say, excuse me, sir, ma'am, we need you to have your mask on.
Two people stabbed down in Tacoma at a convenience store because they asked somebody to wear their mask. I know those are outlier cases that, of course, in the news are sensational to hear about, that the vast majority of people do have grace. But this might be a tipping point, right? Like the freedom to not wear a mask means the freedom to just say, hey, I'm vaccinated, leave me alone. And you don't know if it's true or not.
Just recently, I'm starting to get into golf, right? That's going to be something that myself and my youngest son, we're getting into. And call me naive, I didn't know that on these golf courses and at these country clubs and stuff, There's a dress code. Like, I can't wear my Nike joggers and stuff like that all the time. I can't wear my hoodie. I can't wear what do you mean I gotta tuck my shirt in? Do you know how many I make fun of people that tuck in their shirts? Anyways, I'm bringing that up to say I could easily tell them, hey, what about my freedom to wear whatever I want?
Freedom, right? To wear joggers.
What does my Nike joggers have anything to do with me being able to golf? But no, the golf courses have a dress code. They have, if you will, rules. And if I don't like those rules, I don't just go and play golf on the golf course. So I just hope people, again, have that same grace for others and for their businesses. Now, as far as me, guys, I'm going to be kind of doing things the same, especially if I get on the airplane. I'll be keeping my mask on. Look, you know what? The good thing about this whole mask thing, outside of me when I did get COVID, that was terrible. But anyway, outside of me getting COVID, I didn't get sick at all this year. And last year. So I'm like, you know what? This whole always hand sanitizing and washing your hands and wearing a mask, you know what? That's not a bad idea.
If you feel like you're getting sick, put a mask on. Like, I hope it just becomes normal to wear a mask if you're sick, to not spread it in your workplace at the very least. Just stop. Newsrooms are like petri dishes. I beg people to stay home when they're sick. Now, if they must work, I think maybe I can ask, just wear a mask.
Yeah. You want to talk about the Mariners?
you know what, man? I knew it. I knew that once Governor Jay Inslee said what he said in that press conference, that things were really getting back to normal. And the Mariners, they showed us yesterday that things are getting back to normal. All of this hype, yeah, I knew that was going to happen. You know, all the hype.
Well, let's explain what happened. They called up two of their top prospects from the minors, right?
Yes, they did. And I had Stacy Joe from 17 ESPN come on and tell us what all the hype is about. And I guess apparently that these two players are good. One's a pitcher, one's a phenomenal hitter. And they are saying that these prospects are the future. And they a lot of teams across Major League Baseball would love to have these players. Okay, great. It's all talked about. It was all talked about all day yesterday. I get ready to watch the game, and they almost got no hit. Like, the Mariners almost got no hit. It would have been the first time in Major League Baseball history that a team has been no hit back-to-back games at home.
We're talking about pitcher Logan Gilbert, who didn't have a good time. And here's a clip from outfielder Jared Kelnick.
2-1 pitch, swung on, fly ball to Kelnick in left field. Jared's first play in the big leagues toward the line. Kelnick is there and makes the easy catch, and there's one away. That's going to take care of some of the butterflies.
See, he caught that.
Mm-hmm.
He caught that that fly.
Well, you know what? I even afterwards last night, I saw a lot of the baseball experts saying, of course, it didn't go as well for the Mariners, but they do have promise for these players. You know, it's been so long, right? It's been 20 years.
Yes.
I want to say, and when it did happen 20 years ago, and if you guys listen, if you remember, 2001 was a phenomenal summer. I mean, it was fantastic. Every single game there, then it was Safeco Field. It was 40-plus thousand every night. I look forward to that day coming again.
Do you think the Seattle fans will have enough energy at that point to celebrate a World Series win?
Oh, yeah. No. Colleen, absolutely.
Okay, good.
No. No question about it. Here's the thing. It doesn't take much to get us excited.
No.
It's almost like that person that stands you up every single weekend. And we still come crawling back. And then they call you on Monday at 5 o'clock, and they're like, hey, I'll see you on a Monday. Well, why do you always want to date? Why do you always want to see me on a Monday but never want on a Friday or Saturday? I need to figure that out.
Gee, Scott. Thank you, G. Have a good weekend. Yes. Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien. Chris Sullivan's going to join us in about 20 minutes. Right now, Hannah Scott is here. From new laws on guns and drugs to a victory on racial equity, support for renters, landlords, tools to combat homelessness, much more. It's been a busy week of bill signing for Governor Inslee. But he's broken out his veto pen as well. With the highlights, here's Hannah.
Earlier in the week, the governor happily signed the only gun legislation to make it out this session.
This is a common sense approach that extends our existing prohibition to open carry firearms in limited situations to ensure an individual can't use a weapon to intimidate other citizens.
The bill makes it illegal to carry guns and other weapons on you or in your vehicle within 250 feet of a protest or on most state capitol grounds. People would first get a warning, then face a gross misdemeanor for violations. Supporters argue it's about fighting intimidation. Critics call it a violation of their Second Amendment rights.
Directly mirrors the racism of California's Mulford Act, expressly written to disarm black civil rights protesters. It was wrong then, and it is wrong now.
Nobody should fear being shot to make their voice heard in Olympia or to attend a peaceful protest.
People with valid concealed carry permits and police are exempt. Because of a controversial emergency clause added to the bill, that new law took effect right away and is currently on the books. And voters would not be able to shoot for a referendum. Another bill that made it through with an emergency clause, the Blake Fix.
Passed following the state Supreme Court ruling in the Blake case in February, a ruling which struck down the state's felony statute for possession of controlled substances. This fix by the legislature adds the element of criminal intent the court said was missing, that there must be proof that a suspect knowingly possessed a controlled substance. This bill makes the offense a misdemeanor rather than the felony offense it was prior to the Blake decision, and it also requires the first two offenses to be diverted to treatment. The Blake case and this legislation will help reduce the disparate impact of the previous drug possession statute on people of color. It moves the system from responding to possession as a felony to focusing on the behavioral health response, which is a much more appropriate and successful way to address the needs that underlie drug abuse. The behavioral health aspects of the bill include historic investments in our state's substance use treatment and recovery services.
It will work like the LEAD program, Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion, and requires pre-arrest diversion for the first two times that a person is run in with the cops. Then prosecutors are encouraged to maintain that diversion to treatment on every future incident, which prosecutors tell me is likely going to be the only avenue they have. While many championed the fix and vowed to create a stronger policy over the next 2 years, others were passionately opposed, including Republican Senator John Braun.
I worked hard to help this body come together to get a bipartisan bill off the floor of the Senate, but I could not be more disappointed in what came back from the House. It takes it from a gross misdemeanor to a misdemeanor. If that was the only thing, that may not be the worst. But it also sunsets to full legalization. it takes the diversions to a referral that we know, based on experience, at least my personal experience, will not work. I talked about my nephew a few days ago, or a few week ago when we talked about this. He had attempted suicide. He was in the hospital, in a step-down unit. 2 days ago, while we were on the floor, I got a call from my wife. He checked himself out of rehab. They found him in a hotel room, dead. Dead, Mr. President. He didn't live in the state of Washington. He lives in a place where they have no method to use our legal system to get folks in, keep folks in treatment. This bill in front of us is a path to that, Mr. President, and people will die. People will die because of the path we're taking. This is the wrong direction. We're better off with no bill.
The governor also signing a bill protecting health care for transgender people. State law bans insurance providers from discriminating based on a person's gender identity. But many transgender patients are still being denied coverage for things like mastectomies and facial reconstruction and more. Critics argue it's not fair to require those things to be covered.
Lots of cosmetic surgery that I would personally like to have that my insurance does not pay for.
Under the new law, insurance companies must cover the procedures starting in January. Earlier in the week, the governor signed the Just Cause eviction bill, which requires landlords give a legitimate business reason in order to stop renting to someone. Another controversial bill was signed by the governor that aims to help combat homelessness, but at a price. House Bill 1277 includes a new $100 document recording fee on all home sales to help keep people on the verge of becoming homeless in their homes. Republicans like Doug Erickson fought hard against the bill in the Senate.
Raising taxes on home ownership and making it more expensive to buy a home or sell a home as a tax increase like this will not help with homelessness one bit.
But Senate Budget Lead Christine Rolfes argued,
this bill is an effort to help solve a problem that, quite frankly, I think a lot of us think can't be solved anymore.
And yesterday, a celebration as the governor signed the bill making Juneteenth a legal state holiday. Democratic Representative Melanie Morgan says it's about much more than that.
This is commemorating the end of chattel slavery.
Morgan says it's a continuation of their work started last year with the creation of the State Equity Office.
This says we belong as Black African Americans, that we are humans. And I believe it's another step towards declaring Washington State as an anti-racist state.
Juneteenth marks the day in 1865 when Union soldiers arrived in Galveston, Texas, to tell the last of the slaves they were free 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation.
So, Hannah, at the top of your report, you mentioned this law which does not let you pack a pistol to a, what is it, a rally, any kind of rally?
Any protest, it's any permitted protest, but under our state laws, that's basically any protest. You have to be within 250 feet. You can't have a gun or a weapon, pretty much all weapons, any kind of stabbing weapon, within 250 feet of a protest. And that includes if it's in your vehicle.
Okay. And this was criticized by, I heard you play a cut with somebody who said this is bad because this law has its roots in stopping civil rights protesters from becoming armed.
And he's referring to, I forget the name of the law, it's a law that was passed in California back in the, I believe, the 70s, and it was very much related to the Black Panthers, because the, I believe it was the Black Panthers had stormed the California legislative building or been outside of it or something like that in California very swiftly. So that's what he's referring to.
So, and he so said, it sounded like to me, was he arguing then that the people involved in these civil rights protests ought to be allowed to carry guns?
He was calling it racist because he thought it mirrored that other law. I don't know because I didn't get a chance to talk to him.
Well, whatever his reason, it sounded to me like he was saying, okay, so then these people in these current protests ought to be allowed to arm themselves.
And I believe he was talking more about the part of it that bans around the Capitol campus. But, you know, it could be it's open for interpretation. He did not elaborate.
OK. And this other thing about the drug case, it sounded like so there are Republicans who believe there ought to be an option for involuntary treatment then.
Sure. Yes. And actually, Senator Braun, who you heard there in that passionate speech, I had asked him somewhere earlier in the session about the avenue of compelling someone to treatment. Yeah. And he said he was absolutely, he wanted that, but he knew that it wasn't going to be something that you could get past the Democrats. And Democrats will tell you there is no research anywhere that shows you that compelling treatment is what works. Yeah. It's got to be, you know, on their own terms, essentially. And they get to fail over and over if that's what it takes until they finally get it
right.
Well,
I always defer to research. I was just interested because I thought, maybe I'm wrong, that Republicans would consider that to be like gross government overreach, that you could actually use the force of government to compel somebody to get treatment for a medical problem.
Listen, I'll tell you what, this particular issue, the drug issue and how to address the drug crisis in this state, forget about parties, okay? Yeah. Everybody has a story. Everybody knew somebody. There was many a passion speech on the floor in both the House and the Senate because everybody knew somebody. And you had people voting against their own bills because of the way they had been changed. Everybody wants to see something succeed. The disagreement is on whether we can compel or not compel treatment. We are taking a step forward. This is going to be good to some degree. There's nowhere near enough money in expanding the treatment as needed in this particular budget. They're going to need to do a lot more.
Well, good. So in other words, this debate was conducted based on people's personal experiences, not some sort of partisan talking point.
No, yeah. Partisanship was really out the door.
Good for them. Hannah Scott, thank you, Hannah.
You bet.
From Seattle's Morning News. It has been more than two full weeks since our traffic coach, Chris Sullivan's been on the air. We've missed him. You've missed him. When he popped on Zoom this morning, it looked like he just had a collision with Jadeveon Clowney or something. You don't look well at all. So tell us what happened.
Thanks, Dave. I thought I looked pretty good compared to what I look like. I 2 weeks ago, I got a positive COVID-19 test after our trip to visit Tommy in Idaho and Montana, assuming that's where we got it. It's been a 2 week struggle. And I don't want to overplay this. I mean, it is what it is. And some people have had this 100 times worse than me. I mean, I'm not just talking people who have died, but I mean,
so
I'm talking to my doctor.
Bad. So just be honest about what.
How many times did you go to the emergency room?
Three. And that was primarily just to get some fluids. I did not eat for 10 days. I just have no desire to eat. I didn't, and that's what's kind of weird about this disease. From my experience, and I may be different than many, but this thing comes at you, and it attacks everything that you have, and it does it in waves, and it's almost like it's just messing with you. Your body starts to catch on and start getting up to speed. Oh yeah, well I'm going to leave your lungs for a little bit. I got to start messing with your gut. See how you like diarrhea and throwing up for 2 or 3 days. Your body starts getting at that. You know what? Maybe I'll hit you with the 102-degree fever today. Oh, yeah? Maybe you're starting to hit that. Well, here come the aches and pains. Here comes the loss of appetite. Here comes the chest pain and the congestion. Here comes coughing up bloody phlegm balls the size of 50-cent pieces. And it's like it's methodical and relentless, and it attacks in waves, and your body can only do so much. I mean, it's in triage, and just when it thinks it's got something good and it's made a foothold on the beach, the bombs start dropping somewhere else, and you're in an entirely different set of symptoms. I mean, it's weird. I mean, normally you get something, it attacks what it attacks, and you go from there. This thing just kept rolling, wave after wave after wave,
as
hitting
you
everything
COVID,
I had.
Sully, I know we've stayed in contact through texting and just getting your update on your health, but, you know, I can see it in your eyes. I can see it in your face. You have stared into an abyss that few have stared into, and I'm curious what goes through your mind as you're battling COVID.
Well, there are times where I wasn't sure I was going to make it. There are times where even today, I know I'm not contagious anymore, most likely, according to my doctors. And I know that I'm doing better, but I'm worried that, well, is today going to be a step back? I'll tell you one thing. God bless me with Holly, and I don't know where I'd be without her. She got it, too, in some way. I mean, she tested negative, but her symptoms were not as bad. But I wouldn't have made it without her. She just kept on me, forcing me to try to eat, forcing me to try to do things, to try to stay on the straight and narrow, and I wouldn't be here without her. And I just thank God she didn't get the symptoms as bad as I did and whatnot. She had some stuff, certainly, and there were times where I thought, dear God, and early on, about like Monday, Tuesday, before the COVID, and I started to feel a little different. I said, I got to get out of here. I know you probably already have it, but I'm sleeping in the other room. I'll see you when I get out of here. And we separated and we went in different places. I've been in the spare bedroom office here where I'm broadcasting from now, basically the entire time, just to try to stay away from her. But yeah, it's, this thing's nasty, man.
Had you gotten the vaccination?
No, we were, because of all the travel we were doing, going to be picking up Tommy and things like that from college, and I'd had bad reactions to the shingles vaccine.
Yeah.
I did not want to be driving or traveling while having the kind of reactions I did to that. Those were really intense, and so we were going to probably take it the week after we got home. Anyway, well, you can even hear now that I'm still kind of congested and I'm breathing is not 100%. And I know I'm not sure if they posted the picture at mynorthwest.com, but I did on Facebook. I mean, people are like, hey, you look good. I'm like, no, I don't. I've lost all my calf muscles. I've lost all my thigh muscles. I've lost almost all of the upper body muscle that I'm used to having.
You've
my body ate itself.
23 pounds.
23 pounds.
In 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
My body just ate itself.
You bared it all and posted a picture of you in just shorts to talk about your battle with COVID, and that's going to show up on MyNorthwest.com.
I don't look like myself at all, do I?
No, you don't. What are the doctors telling you then? How long does this go on?
Well, you just baby steps. Slowly but surely just try to keep eating, keep trying to build your strength. And just try to keep going and pray to God you're not a long hauler and that these symptoms aren't going to continue. Or if they do, they may not be as bad as they could be. And you just take it hour by hour, day by day, and just hope that you get better.
Are you at a point right now, Sully, where, you're obviously coming on the air to say hello to the listeners who have wondered where you are, but are you at a point where you want to be a messenger?
Yeah. I mean, that's why I took off my shirt and bared it all. I usually consider myself way too fat. But when you've lost 23 pounds of muscle and I'm usually a pretty big guy, and I'm still 218 pounds. Don't get me wrong. I'm not small, but it's obvious to people who know. And I just want people to be out there and go, listen, we weren't being reckless. We weren't being stupid. We got caught in situations where, the rules are different. And if that's where we got it, you can still get this thing. And this thing is not normal. And just, be prepared. Get your vaccine when you can. I'm not sure when I'm going to be eligible. My doctor said it could be 90 days after, depending on how things go and whatnot. But, yeah, just to hope for the best and just...
Get your vaccine.
Get your vaccine.
Wear your
mask. Just
if
be
you
careful.
Feel unsafe.
And that was one of the things we ran into in Montana. There was a lot of social pressure to stick with what they were doing, because that's what they were. That's how they are handling things. And it's hard to get caught. It's hard not to get caught up in that. And we did. But yeah, here I am. 14 days out the other side, and still struggling, but. Lucky to be talking to you and lucky to be here.
We're so happy you're here, Sully.
Yeah, we miss you. We miss you, buddy. Yeah.
And you're getting a lot of messages of love on the text line right now. Just people,
that's great.
God bless you. We're praying for you. Love you. Miss you. So you've got a lot of people behind you. And when you're ready,
hopefully soon.
I can hear you out of breath. When you're ready, we'd love to have you back.
Well, yeah, it's been interesting. And I'm sorry to have kept this so quiet for a while, but I didn't know what was going to happen. So I'm usually an open book. You know that about me, guy. I'm usually reasonably open. I just decided to hang on to it for a little bit.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Take
I miss
care
you guys.
Yourself.
Miss you, too.
Boy, after that, I'm getting my booster shot now.